Nathan Zagura, Vic Carucci back with you on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford. And, of course, it is time for one of our favorite games of the week, the Friday forecast. We bring in Dave DiNatale,
yes,
our outstanding producer. Dino, let's get forecasting.
Let's get forecasting.
Number five.
All right, Johnny Manziel, because, of course, you know, when you can't talk about coaches, new coaches on one hand, without bringing up Johnny Football on the other hand. But question for you, kind of semi-serious, I guess. Does his potential signing with LeBron James's LRMR company, does that make you any more or less weary about taking him with that fourth overall pick?
No impact on me whatsoever.
I'm going to say none. I think you've got to keep this decision to football. I mean, the negotiation, the agents, yeah, they're part of the story, or, you know, part of the process of getting this done. But I've had any number of GMs tell me through the years that you've got to evaluate it almost exclusively on the talent, unless it was identical with somebody else, and then you chose the guy that you had the better chance of signing. But it's cut and dried now. The rookie wage scale is slotted, mm-hmm, and you're going to pay the guy what you're going to pay the guy as a bonus. There isn't much else you can do. You know, they'll go for the whole money, what do they call it, the offset money clauses to make sure the player is not losing anything if he ends up elsewhere before his contract's up, et cetera, et cetera. But, no, I'd say that's not an issue.
Because you understand why I ask. It's only because, you know, Johnny Manziel is going to have a brand, and he's going to have. I mean, Johnny Football is a great brand when he turns to a pro. And the thing that people are knocking him right now is he going to be focused enough on the game and getting better once he gets into the NFL?
I say yes, because the way that this thing works in the NFL, with the way that they've changed these rookie contracts, his next contract is where he's going to get paid. He wants to be a $100 million man. That comes after being a franchise quarterback for the first 4 years of your career.
I hope he's focused. This happens pretty much every year. There's somebody who comes in with that brand and a lot of distraction because of that brand. I think his is a little more unique than others. I hope he's focused on that and not so caught up in the moment. And remember, it's the people around him that will have a big factor in this. Managing this guy will be a challenge by the Browns or any team. But if you're going to go down this road, you go in with eyes wide open. You know what you're getting, and your task is to make sure you manage him. Not complete. I mean, it's different. It's in a different way. But the management of Josh Gordon going forward, your superstar wide receiver who emerged before your eyes, keeping him on the right track through this offseason and beyond is the task that the Browns have to meet and step up to.
Number four.
All right, last night, guys, the Pro Football Hall of Fame announced its 15 finalists for what will be the class of 2014. Michael Strahan, Charles Haley, Kevin Green, Andre Reed, Jerome Bettis, Tim Brown, John Lynch, Will Shields, Aeneas Williams, Morton Anderson, Eddie DeBartolo, and, of course, the senior nominees Ray Guy and Claude Humphrey. I'll give you six. Who's going to make the Hall of Fame?
Well, I'm going to go with Andre Reed at first, my guy from Buffalo.
I knew you would.
I'm very biased there. I think Michael Strahan should be in there. I like Jerome Bettis. I think Aeneas Williams has been a guy through the years who's been something special. And let me see. How many is that?
I think it was four.
Four. I've got two more. I'm going to go with... I think Tim Brown should go in. I think get both receivers in. He's deserving too. There's five, and who's my sixth guy? You know what? I wouldn't hate it if Eddie DeBartolo got recognized for the incredible work he did with the 49ers. I wouldn't hate it, but it's a long shot.
Oh, you know what? I missed a name. Derek Brooks. I'm sorry. I missed Derek Brooks and Tony Dungy.
I like Brooks too.
Is Dungy going to get in as a coach?
I don't think this time around.
I don't either.
I'm going to say Brooks. You know what? Let's replace. Let's pull I'm going to. They're so tough with receivers in that room. I've sat in that room. I'm gonna replace Tim Brown with Brooks. I forgot about Derek Brooks. I'd like to see. Yeah, Derek should be in on his first ballot.
What about you, Nathan?
All right, I'm gonna go with Derek Brooks. I'm gonna go with Eddie DeBartolo Jr. I'm gonna go with Ray Guy, who I think it was the forerunner of the modern punter and arguably the greatest at his position to ever play the game.
I love him too, but. It won't happen. They're crazy in that room. Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to go. I have three so far.
Yeah.
Brooks, DeBartolo, Ray Guy. Walter Jones, 9 Pro Bowls in 13 seasons. I will put him in there. Andre Reed, I will put in. And I'll put in Michael Strahan. That'll be my 6.
That's a good class.
That's a good class. You know, they're such biased against kickers. And like Steve Tasker is another guy. And I know it's a Buffalo guy, but he is so deserving as a special teams cover guy. There's been nobody like him. Ray Guy, there's been nobody like him. But
Ray Guy deserves to be in. Ray Guy was.
He does, Nathan. He does. I'm just telling you. And sitting in that room, and you would, I would have to tie you up to a chair because you'd be diving across that table strangling people.
I'd get heated.
It's insane. Oh, by the way, since we brought that topic up. Cameras, as I understand it, NFL Network cameras are supposed to be in the room this year, which will be amazing because this was always done. And I've done it multiple times, about a half dozen times through the years, as either a voter for as president of the Professional Football Writers of America or at large national or whatever. But now they're going to have cameras in there, so. You won't be hiding behind anything. It'll be a very transparent process, and it'll be interesting to see how and when they air what comes out of that room.
I can't. Tony Grossi couldn't be more excited. couldn't be more excited about that prospect.
Right,
yes.
Dana.
All right.
Number 3.
Yeah, nice job on that last one, guys. All right. Before we get to the playoffs, here's a playoff-related question. If you were a Charger fan, does Ken Whisenhunt interviewing in the 3 days leading up to their playoff game concern you about his priorities?
I'm going to say no. I know this. In collaborating with Charlie Weiss on a book, he went into extreme detail on the courting by Notre Dame of him as its head coach while he was offensive coordinator of the Patriots and how he was how this had to be. And again, this is the Belichickian way too. Bill Belichick, he was so wary of Bill's. Bill said, "You got to go for this. It's a great opportunity, but at the same time, we're in full-scale preparation for the postseason, and you know you better work. You got to work this around us." So, as I understand it, it was either like 11 o'clock at night, somewhere between 11 and midnight, that Notre Dame officials had to fly into New England. To Rhode Island, wherever they met him, I think at the Westin in Providence, Rhode Island, to have their comprehensive interview with him. And it was after he was finished, you know, going through a day of prep for a playoff game. And so it can be done. Now, I'm not sure what the schedule of these interviews are with Whisenhunt, but you're doing it around your prep. So it can be done. And by the way, the Patriots went on to win a Super Bowl with Weiss and that coaching staff before he took the Notre Dame job.
I feel like it either has to be a disservice to his preparation for these interviews or a disservice to his preparation for these games. I don't think there are enough hours in the day to fully prepare to interview as the head coach for 3 different football teams and the amount of research and time it would take to devise a plan specific to each team that you'd want to talk about to impress the people who might hire you and to prepare for a football game. I think that something has to be compromised in that.
All right.
Number 2.
So with that, gentlemen, it's time to call your shot. First, the Saturday divisional playoff games. The early game is in the NFC, New Orleans, y'all, at Seattle, and Indianapolis at New England.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right. I've got Seattle winning it in a closer game than certainly the first meeting by the score of 27-21.
I'm going to go with Seattle also in that game, and I do think it'll be reasonably close. The thing I don't see the Saints able to do in this game that they did against Philly is stop the run. I think Marshawn Lynch has a big day for the Seahawks, and when he does, everything else opens up, Russell Wilson, et cetera, et cetera. And I think they win this to the tune of like, 24-17.
What about a Foxborough tomorrow night? You got New England, Indianapolis.
I'm going to take New England in that one, 24-23. But if of the games on Saturday, I would not be surprised if Indianapolis somehow leaves that game the victors.
I'm going to say the Patriots win. I'm going to say it's something like 27-14. I think this will be a game they can control, especially with their running game. The Colts do not handle that very well, and they're going to find the success on the ground that the Kansas City Chiefs would have had Jamaal Charles not left the game with a concussion or his backup. So on the presumption that the Patriots running backs are all intact physically, they should be able to do that, and I think Tom Brady will work his Tom Brady magic with those undersized but effective receivers. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Colts become overzealous in their coverage. I think the way you deal with smaller guys like Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman is you pound the daylights out of them, basically. And they may get a little aggressive with that. I think officials are going to kind of look at that. I know the calls tend to be a little different in the postseason. I'm not sure who that officiating crew is. But something tells me the Colts are going to get a couple of undesirable penalties in a game like that. I'm very much loving the vibe of what the Colts did in that comeback. And that's the other thing, the emotional, dramatic 28-point thing that they had to overcome to beat the deficit that they had to overcome to beat the Chiefs last week. I just think that's such a mountain that you climbed that I don't know if what they've got left in the tank to take to Foxborough.
All right, and finally,
number one.
The Sunday divisional playoff games, the early game again in the NFC, San Francisco flying across the country to Carolina, followed by San Diego at Denver.
I have the 49ers winning that. I think they go to the Super Bowl in the NFC. I like them a lot. Carolina has beaten them at home. There was no Michael Crabtree in that game, no Alden Smith in that game. I think those are big pieces that come back for the 49ers. Steve Smith is going to play, but is less than 100%. He really is the only, wide receiver that scares me. Ted Ginn does have some vertical speed there. Greg Olsen, a solid tight end. But I think the 49ers, just too complete and should be able to win. I don't know if they will, but they should be able to win that game.
You look at this game and you remember that Michael Crabtree was not available when the Panthers took on the 49ers, and that made it entirely different for Colin Kaepernick. I think Colin Kaepernick is a far different quarterback in this game. Showed me so much against Green Bay. I know a lot of folks think against that Packers defense that the Niner offense should have had more success, but I'm quite fine with what they did, and especially with what Colin Kaepernick did as a runner and a thrower, and especially a thrower connecting with Crabtree. I think that's a matchup the Panthers will struggle with, as good as their defense might be. They've got a question or two at receiver with Steve Smith's health. Maybe he's playing some possum by talking about this. I'm 71%, I'm 52.3%,
he's
or whatever
playing.
He's saying. He's,
of course,
having fun with that.
There's 100% he's playing.
He'll play, and he'll play. What level he'll play and how much he contributes, we'll see. But I think the Niners are destined to, I'm with you on this, Nathan, destined to be a Super Bowl team again from the NFC. So I think they go out there and win that game by the tune of, I don't know how high scoring it'll be, maybe like 21-10, 14, something like that.
The late game Sunday is the third meeting of the year, San Diego and Denver.
Ryan Matthews didn't practice today. I think that is a big loss. If he is unable to go, that's a big loss for San Diego. What they've done so well against Denver, and the reason that they have played Denver tight, 47-48 in the two games combined, they have held all this season. Denver was held below 30 points just three times, both two of those against San Diego. Denver was held below 400 yards of total offense only two times all year. You guessed it. That's right, both games against San Diego. The Chargers possessed the ball for 38 minutes in each of their two games against the Denver Broncos this year. They limited them well below their normal play volume, 61-54 in the two games. They'd averaged 77 plays a game. The key, a big key to that was Ryan Matthews, his ability to run the football, especially in the game that they won. He did not practice. If he's unable to go, that means they're going to have Danny Woodhead and Ronnie Brown. I like that, but I don't think that is enough to hold them off. Denver gets the win here, even though San Diego with Ryan Matthews, I think, could have beat them. They do play them tough. I say 31-24.
If any team is going to beat the Broncos there, it is San Diego. They're built for this. Their third down offense, their ability to control the clock, and despite the distraction of interviews, I think Ken Wisenhunt can come up with a pretty good plan to beat a defense that's missing Von Miller, and that's a big, big absence for the Broncos. I'm going to go for the upset here. I think the Chargers are going to end up pulling this one off, and it'll be a tough game. I hate this for Peyton Manning because I think he's going to set a record he doesn't want to set for playoff losses. He's got the most playoff starts, right? And I think this would be the most playoff losses. I think the number is either 10 or 9 or something like that. So I don't want to see that for him. I like Peyton a whole lot. But I think the Chargers can come in there. Phillip Rivers is playing well. And I just see this Charger team finding a way in a weird kind of game maybe. But it'll be like one of these 17-14, down to a field goal game.
Wow.
17-14, not an offensive explosion.
I'm not expecting the explosion. That's the only way this is going to work. Now, if the Broncos tear it up and start getting going with their stuff, then that's trouble. But I just think I got this feeling that the Chargers are going to have John Pagano and their schemers are going to find a way to keep them under wraps. And it's just – and a lot of misfires. It just has that feeling of that kind of – ugly kind of game, but it's the only kind of game that the Chargers. I'm trying to create a scenario. My path to victory for the Chargers is it's got to be bizarre because under any other circumstances they don't win. But I just want to be different, and I just want to try to come up with something off the beaten trail. I'm probably rooting for Denver because I think they were my Super Bowl team, but I don't know. Just don't you think the Chargers got something weird going on?
There's no question there. Right? Like I said, they're a little bit of a team of destiny. There's no question about it.
Mojo.
Mojo. Yeah,
they've got some mojo going.
That, gentlemen, is this week's Friday Forecast.
Excellent. Well, we will be back with more Cleveland Browns Daily driven by Liberty Ford when Michael Regeye joins us right after this.